Kevin Serafin. Kevin Serafin.
Snakes. Kevin Serafin. Snakes.
I thought we were doing a beat thing.
No? He's the best.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That must be generous with some shoes on.
That train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bouncy castle?
Hitler.
Just prepare to. Yeah, so just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to The Undebeatables, your Pacers podcast and member of Almighty Baller Radio. Today is April 20th, 2017. Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show is about one thing and one thing only. Game 3, Pacers versus Cavs. Before we get started, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do it here. We are on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. We are Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. Our website is TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form there. You can send us all a message. We got an email address. Shout out at TheUndebeatables.com.
Shout out.
Joining me are all three of our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacers fans? What is up, Undebeatables? Shout out to
D.C.
I don't know. I
D.C.
forgot.
D.C. and 420?
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's 420. That's what I was... Yeah, I forgot. Sorry. Did you get that? That was a long bit.
That was good. Okay. I like that.
We didn't even plan that.
Yeah.
You guys know the Mousetrap and the bar by my house, and this is their biggest event of the year, is on April 20th. They got a tent outside. They got bands, like, all day. And then next door, 20 past 4, which is, I don't know what they sell there, probably magazines or something.
I was thinking, walking sticks maybe, canes.
They have an event as well. They're open all night. But the corner at Keystone and 56th Street, be careful. There are a lot of confused pedestrians in that area. Please be careful if you're driving, because you will run them over and they won't even know.
Solid shout out.
From Indianapolis, Indiana, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles, John Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? I'd like to shout out to Sunday, when this long, horrific season will be finally over.
Oh, dear God. That got dark fast.
From Eugene, Oregon, out west, it's our enforcer, John Harper.
Well, you know, I'm shouting out Oregon on this very special day. Also shouting out the eternal optimism and Pollyanna of Jonathan Colson. Thanks for that, buddy.
You're welcome.
Well, we want to talk about the game that we all just watched this evening. No, I'm not talking about the Bucks-Raptors game. I'm talking about the Pacers game against the Cavs, game 3. This was tonight, April 20th. Pacers bring they're bringing their A game against the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think this is the most important game of the season. They're coming into this game down 2-0 off two close games in Cleveland. Game 3 back at home, and I'll tell you what, right now, stat of the week, Pacers score 74 points in the first half. It's their franchise record for points in a half in the playoffs. So shout out to the Pacers on this one. The first half was amazing. Second half, less amazing.
First half was magical, Joey. Let's start there.
It was fantastic.
Like the crowd was amped. Like, I wasn't there I was not in the building, but just through the TV, you know, the place was going crazy. The Cavs came out, they were doubling Paul George, and he was trusting his teammates, and his teammates responded. And we were hitting shots left and right. Lance hits his first three. I thought the roof was going to cave in when he did that. I mean, it just was, it was so fun. Kevin Serafin, just the new cult hero, comes in off the bench and just lots of energy, hitting shots. We had 37 points in the first quarter. It's just, you know, we were up. We had not been up by more than 6 points this whole series. And, you know, we're suddenly up 12 at the end of the quarter. It was just great. It was fantastic. In the second quarter, Paul George goes on his own 11, you know, point scoring streak. And, yeah, no. Miles Turner had a thunder dunk that just, you know, lit the internet on fire. This was as much fun as I've had as being a fan of this team all year. It was fantastic.
I was having a lot of fun, but also I knew it was the first half, and as a Pacer fan, I was nervous. I mean, so Jason, were you feeling confident at halftime?
I don't know if confidence is the right word. I felt
scared as hell.
Encouraged that they responded in the way that they did. You know, there was a lot of talk between game two and game three about comments that Paul George said about his teammates post game. Some people said he was throwing them under the bus. Paul George responded and said, no, people asked me what these guys can do better. I said what they can do better. You know, I'm with my teammates. So I was a little bit worried about the morale of the team. So to see them come out and chip in and do all the things, and even Nate McMillan made a checkers move and put CJ Miles into the starting lineup. Thanks for listening to the pod, Nate.
Thanks for listening to the pod, Nate.
Shout out.
I hope you can still get the podcast wherever you retire after the season. Just yes. But so, yeah, you got to feel good about this. Up 25. But of course, I'm a Pacers fan. I've been wounded by this team before. This team is, if anything, inconsistent. And, yeah, I was nervous. And they have the best player on the planet on the other side of the floor. So.
We were up 26, though. 26 in our house. We played great in our house.
I mean, 25 at literally 25 at the break, right? Like,
yeah. Right.
Yeah.
This, I guess my stat of the week then, I'm going to, you know, scoop Coulson on this one. We are tied for the greatest comeback against. Is that a record for us? I think.
Well, I mean, the Pacers are listed in that line item in the record book.
On the wrong side of the greatest playoff comeback, 26 points down, and we end up on the wrong side of that. That's
so the greatest choke of all time? Is that what that is? On our side?
It seems fairly high on the list.
So what happened, right? Okay, so we know that the Pacers scored horribly in the second half. They end up losing by 5. LeBron James went absolutely bananas. But, you know, I was listening to some old pods today, and I came across the episode that we recorded after that Knicks game where we played super well in the first half and then scored 29 points in the second half. Mm-hmm. And this was like deja vu all over again, watching this. Mm-hmm. It was as if nobody wanted to play basketball anymore. And nobody felt like running or, you know, setting screens or, you know, Miles Turner just disappeared. You know, a guy who had gotten called out by Paul George, then comes out in the first half and is super physical. You mentioned, Coulson, the thunder dunk. He was really doing a good job, I thought, on Tristan Thompson controlling the glass. And then he just disappeared, just taken completely out of the game.
Yeah, he started hanging out at the three-point line and missing 4 of those for us.
Yeah, no, and that, I mean, that's a real thing, right? He fell in love with a three-point shot late in the game. And they were good looks. They were. And he was there. That shot was there, but that shot was there for him for the same reason it was there for Lance, right? This is a strategy. This isn't an accident. It's a Cavs strategy, and Miles Turner is a great shooter, and he's going to be a great ball player. But this is a big stage, and he's a young kid, and he didn't hit the shots. That's just what happened.
But Harper, I'm concerned because he played well in the series last year against the Raptors. You know, does anybody else feel like he's regressing? Like, is our coaching staff doing enough to develop him? Is, you know, Paul George as a leader trying to foster him to make him better? Like, this, he really disappeared on this stage. Thaddeus Young was fantastic tonight. I thought Jeff Teague took some leadership role down the stretch when the lead was disappearing and you know, tried to attack the basket and, you know, tried to, you know, get to the line. Paul George was magical, as he often is. You know, he was just a assist shy of a triple double with 36 points, 15 rebounds, and 9 assists. And, you know, the guy that needed to show up there was Miles Turner, and he did not.
Well, but I think to answer all of your questions, no.
Yeah.
So I will say this. For his three-point tries, he was 0-for-3 from the night. So most of those were in the last couple minutes of the game where they basically were looking for any shot that was sort of okay. You know, when they were playing catch-up at that point. Those I wasn't worried too much about. But in general, yes, he disappeared in the second half where he was magical in the first half.
Right. But to pin this on a 21-year-old kid. Right?
No.
Oh, great. No, I'm not going to put this loss at his feet. I've got lots of other people I want to put it on the feet of. So, first of
he
all...
He shouldn't even be at the top of your list. There's so no, much blame
he's,
to go around.
He's at probably like 6 or 7 on the list right now.
I mean, I like the idea of are we doing enough, but that's a different conversation for a different day, right? Like,
yeah.
He didn't do anything wrong today. He took the shots that were available. They were within
the
system.
That dunk was fire. That dunk was
and
so
that dunk
good.
That was big.
That was so fire. It was so awesome.
But I would say that he did, I mean, I felt like in the third quarter, you know, one of the things that we were doing very well in the first half was being active on both ends of the floor, defending the rim, challenging every shot.
And they were playing championship basketball in the third quarter, right?
Sure. Yeah, they certainly stepped up their game, but nobody responded to that outside of Paul George and maybe Thad Young. Kept playing super hard and doing things. I personally thought that Miles Turner fell into the trap of getting pushed around again by Tristan Thompson.
Yeah.
You know, schematically, maybe they made adjustments and pulled him away from the rim because he was doing a great job defending the rim in the first half. But yeah, I felt his activity level was down. But you're right. I'm not going to blame him for the loss. But it is a symptom, I think, of the collective apathy of this team, basically.
Yep. And the collective culture of, you know, sometimes we're just not tough enough, right? For me, again, I know I harp on this all the time, but for me, it's about the coaching staff, right? Somebody's got to stand up in a timeout and be like, guys, pride, get it done. And I never feel like that happens for us.
Well, okay, there's a couple things about coaching here. One, to Nate's credit and to the coaches' staff's credit, we made some adjustments from game two to game three.
What adjustments besides the one change in the starting lineup?
Which should have happened in game two.
That should have happened in game like 32.
Right. No, so we started CJ Miles. That definitely helped. But we stopped switching on screens. We stopped getting those mismatches. We were doing a better job of defending them. And it's because we weren't switching every time.
We weren't switching every time? Full disclosure, I'm on the West Coast, so I don't get home. Like, it was 87-77 from what I watched. And we were switching screens late.
Yes. Well, you know why we were doing that? Because Monta Ellis was on the floor. I don't know. Basically, we went back to our old strategy. We were doing a lot more sort of high press zone stuff, flashing out, switching out,
and
not actually
different
switching.
Looks.
Yeah, exactly.
Insanity.
It was pretty impressive. Actually, we got them out of their offense, and
3 days.
Yeah, no, and we did the right thing. And what we did was we sort of made Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, who just absolutely destroyed us in game two, less effective. And so that was working for us. And then Tyronn Lue or LeBron James
More likely.
the Cavs in general made a switch. And basically they took Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love off the floor, and they surrounded LeBron with a bunch of shooters. Yep, yep. So Korver, Fry, Darren Williams, these guys are the guys that captained this comeback. It was LeBron James and four shooters.
And LeBron James
scored 41 points in a triple-double and beat us by himself, essentially.
It can't be understated. Like, he didn't beat him by himself. This was a brilliant coaching move, and, I mean, we can all have our opinions on this, but I, for one, think LeBron should win Coach of the Year. The guy always seems to press the right button. And you're right. We seem to have an answer, so they gave us something we hadn't seen. Like,
Didn't have another answer. That's a coaching staff issue.
They had another plan in place in case they were getting beat by 25. They had a secret weapon that they were going to break out. And we can't even come up with two game plans for a first and second half. Like, checkers and chess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing that happened was on the other end of the floor where the sense of urgency was just gone. Mm-hmm. It was like basically coming out of halftime, the idea was like, okay, well, let's just run 24 seconds every time we have the ball.
I can't do it.
And we'll just milk this game away.
Can't do it. I'm disappointed, obviously, with the level of engagement in the second half. You just got to be able to play the right level of defense. I really thought coming into this game, Colson and I were talking last night, and I was like, hey, look, we got to hold them under 50%. If we can do that at our house, we should be able to win this game because our bench is going to play better, and our defense doesn't, over the course of the season hasn't traveled well. We're going to play good D at home. If we can keep them under 50%, we should be able to take advantage of them because they're not quite dialed in yet. And for 24 minutes, that was true. And by the end of the game, we're at 41%.
The first half was just magical. It was ball movement. It was great passing. Exactly. It was, it's good team basketball. And the second half, I felt like, and I don't want to say this is what it was. It felt like Nate's halftime speech was like, oh, just don't lose this game. We'll be good. And, they took their foot off the gas, used 24 seconds.
The Cavs cranked up their D. But
they did a great job.
You're right. We stopped moving the ball.
Obviously, they did a great job.
Yeah, it's hard. I know we just watched the game not that long ago. It's hard. I love the Cavs. It's hard for me to give them a ton of credit for what just happened outside of LeBron. Channing Frye hit some good shots. LeBron was a beast on both ends of the floor. But I felt like this game was just eminently winnable by the Pacers with the huge lead. And they just didn't do anything they did in the first half to take this game. If they had played a shadow of the game they played in the first half, they would have won.
This is the whole season in a nutshell, though, Joey. I mean, this is who this
team is.
That
doesn't make it easier.
So last year, Frank Vogel, who had led us to the playoffs in five of his six seasons or something like that, essentially lost because he made a bad coaching decision in one playoff game. He left his bench out there for too long. Mm-hmm. Have we given Larry Bird enough of a green light to fire Nate McMillan now?
I mean, this is...
It's an historic loss.
Yeah, can you think of a worse gut punch loss in... I mean, outside of like the four-point play against the Knicks, I can't think of a...
But that wasn't a coaching thing.
But I'm just trying to think
about... The
game
last year where we were up 15 in the fourth quarter and we lost.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, look, the real... I'm not shy about how I feel about this. This decision was made for me months ago. Sure. We look like a team right now that is in game 40 of the regular season. We don't quite know what we want to do. We're not quite continuous. We don't quite trust each other. And we're in game 3 of the playoffs. Like, Nate was the wrong choice. Is it eating crow to lose this guy? Yes. But what bugs me more than anything is that he stumbled upon a Coach of the Month award because Lance Stephenson happened to come on board. And I feel like that makes the idea of firing him a little bit more difficult. He needs to go.
He does not... I was watching the post-game press conference And for a guy whose team just blew a 26-point lead
historic.
To lose basically the deciding game of a playoff series, he wasn't angry at all. He didn't express emotion. He was just like, well, you know, LeBron's really good, and we tried to do these things, and we didn't make shots, and blah, blah, blah. That's not a leader. That's
somebody give me Fizdale.
Right.
How about that for data?
By the way, who knew that Fizdale was the reincarnation of Tone Loke? Like, what the hell?
No kidding.
Okay, it sounds exactly like Tone Loke.
Tone Loke and Denny Green.
Mm, interesting. You brought up Lance Stephenson. I want to ask another question. So after game two, Paul George was asked about Lance Stephenson needing to control himself because he kind of got flustered when Kevin Love was abusing him. And he said, you know, Lance needs to have better composure. You know, we rely on him. He's one of the leaders of this team, blah, blah, blah. He's a leader of this team? He joined the team in game 77. And he's a leader of this team?
Yeah, we've
Doesn't
talked
that
about
speak
this.
Volumes well, about no, this team?
We have a leaderless team. That's the whole point. Paul George is not a good leader, and there's no one else on the team. Like, Lance Stephenson is probably the de facto leader on the team now, and he just showed up. Like, we don't have a leader in our coach. There's nobody on the roster that you can say is a leader except Paul George, and he's a flawed one at that.
I think all we have is a disappointed father in Larry Bird who just shakes his head when we make mistakes. And you don't know why. Yeah. He just does it, and he never explains himself. And you lose, God. And you go home.
Look, if this doesn't have massive fallout, then, you know, something's terribly wrong with our franchise, right?
I mean, here's the thing. We have another game to play this season.
No, we don't. It's over. This thing is just wrapped. Just roll over. Show your belly.
What do you want, a forfeit
game? It doesn't matter. Yeah.
In front of our home crowd.
That's yeah, I'm fine with that. This is over. Like, if we win
this is
this
why
thing,
you're not allowed to coach my team.
If we win game four, cool. Just get blown out in game five. Yeah, awesome. I don't want it to drag out anymore. Just
no.
Put a nail in the coffin of this season because it's over, buddy.
No, look, it doesn't matter. You have... I'm sorry. If a team is going to have pride, you don't lose in front of your home crowd.
We don't have pride, Harper. We don't have
anything.
You better
take this as an opportunity to teach it.
Ugh.
Unacceptable. We better go out and win game four like we mean it. I'm sorry. If you want this organization to have a future, Larry Bird better get in that locker room and start spitting game. Paul George, if he has any intention of staying here, better get in there and say, you know what? Not in our house. I'm sorry.
Harper, I know that this loss just happened, but you realize that this loss means that we don't have Paul George anymore. Like, that's what just happened.
I'm not ready to have that conversation. I'm not ready yet. What I'm telling you is that we've got one more game, and someone, and whoever that person is, deserves a job next year with our team. Whoever steps up and says, you know what? Not in our house. We're going to play 48 minutes of what we did in the first 24 minutes of this game. And we're going to smoke these guys because we care more. And our fans deserve that. And our fans will cheer if we're the people on the ground, fighting for the loose balls, doing the right things. Our fans will do that. And if this team does not do that for their fan base, then shame on them. Shame on
I think Thaddeus Young and Lance Stephenson will come out and do that. That's what I think.
That's not good enough.
I think Paul George will too. Paul George works his butt off.
Paul George is I agree. I'm not. I'm just saying that he's not going to be a Pacer next year.
But they need to have everyone else doing that too, right? They need to show that as a team.
I just don't know. There aren't enough guys with heart on this team. It's just been proven all season long. I mean, that's why we have the talent to be a 50-win team and to actually put a fight up against the Cavs. And we just haven't done it. We haven't done it all season long. I don't expect that to happen in game four.
We put up a great fight against the Cavs in three games. We really did. We just didn't win any of them.
Yeah.
And if this team goes on to win a championship, part of me says that's problematic.
The finals were in the first round of the Eastern Conference. That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. No, you could make that argument to Paul George at that point.
I just did.
And keep him around.
I
just did. Very, very... That's very quickly, with no evidence. But
hey, when did we start accepting evidence as the benchmark of opening our faces?
Not in my house.
Not in my house. Flat Earth, baby.
I was really excited when Lance made that one of his threes, and he screamed, "This is my effing house!" And the crowd was going just bananas. They had to call a timeout after that. Because when Lance hits a three, you got to call timeout. I think just by
because something's gone terribly
something's
wrong.
Broken.
He was 3-7 for the day. Like, he's a good 3-point shooter when he's open in
Why
Indiana.
Why is he taking 7 3-pointers?
I don't.
Why did he hit three? That's absurd.
I think he hit three of his first four.
I think that's right. I think that's one of those. If you're the other team, he's like, no, hit the first one because after that, like, you're no good.
And the Cavs were like, yeah, go ahead and shoot that.
Exactly.
So is the response in game four just come out with the same lineup and say we just need to play harder? Does Nate McMillan need to make another move?
No, who cares? You play this like you intend to win it.
I agree. I totally agree.
Nate McMillan needs to correct the mistakes that he's made so far in the series. He needs to have a defensive game plan for the first half, a different one for the second half, show them lineups that they haven't seen. He needs to pretend like he's an NBA coach.
I think the other thing, too, with that is to have a backup plan and have two backup plans, because that's your only job is to coach and to have plans. Mm-hmm. Because that's not what, when things have gone poorly, we had no response. And that was the end of the story, and we would lose the game. It got real sad in here.
I know, it's so demoralizing.
Because you should have a backup plan and a backup plan for the backup plan.
What's so demoralizing is that we all know this. We know this. Like, if Nate had called me and been like, what should I do? I'd be like, have at least three, if not four, different defensive strategies that you want to employ. And what did we do
for two hang right up on you.
Solid games? For 96 minutes, we employed the exact same defensive strategy with little effect.
So this game was lost around, what was that, July 6th of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's good to know.
All right. Mark Jackson.
Mark Jackson, baby.
Becky Hammond, anybody?
I'm in.
Let's do it.
It's a bucket of sand that has timeout written on one side and then, like, nothing on the other side, and then just have an assistant coach come and, like, turn it around when we need a timeout. That would be better than
Name with Mel. Wilson is our new coach.
Yes.
So I wrote a joke after this game. You guys want to hear it?
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. How many Cavaliers does it take to screw in a light bulb?
All of them.
LeBron James.
Five. Three to stand on the perimeter. LeBron James to screw it in himself. And Kyrie Irving to tell him that the bulb is flat.
Okay. We've not mentioned yet for this show that LeBron James broke two records this game. None of us like Kobe Bryant, let's be honest. And this is great because LeBron passed Kobe in two different categories. The first one was playoff scoring. He is just passing at 56-40 for career playoff points, and so he's now third on the all-time NBA playoff scoring list, which I think is crazy. And the second one is number of three-pointers. He passed Kobe there. Hit his 293rd in this game. And he was on fire for three this game, like long ones, like unreasonable ones.
Like 32-footers.
Right. Like things that even he's smiling about knowing that it's not right. It was unreasonable.
Congratulations, LeBron. We're witnessing one of the greatest athletes to ever play basketball. It's
and
really
that's just
fantastic.
I find that unreasonable that I'm not mad at LeBron.
Yeah.
Not really.
A loss to his team, I'm still like...
With too many Cavs fans in my house, I'm still like, you know what, LeBron? At the end of the day, you're pretty damn classy, And I mean, just an unbelievable performance from him.
I was mad at Kevin Love, too, who committed an offensive foul, I believe, against Kevin Serafin. You know, got him pretty good offensively. And then he helped him up like a jerk.
Right.
Yeah.
What a jerk.
Yeah, I did do that.
Unacceptable.
You know, it is small consolation, but we lost to greatness.
Sure. Absolutely.
I feel bad, though.
I mean, you're up 26. How do you lose that game?
You don't have to do that much when you're up 26.
But that's the problem. That's the way that we approached it. Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, and we were playing not to lose, as opposed to playing
and that's
which is a cliche, exactly.
That's not a cliche. That's a fact.
Yeah, right. And after everything we just talked about all the reasons that fell apart, that is the main culprit, right? Mm-hmm. We played not to lose, and that's why we lost.
Yep.
Yeah, we would have been way better off being up 10 at halftime.
I think if we were up 10 at halftime, we might have won this game.
I mean, if we're playing any other team in the league, but the Warriors or the Spurs. We could have played that style of game and won hands down, no problem. That would have rolled over. But there's three teams in the league that you just can't mess around with.
True.
And we happen to run into the GOAT, right? And, you know, if you think your lead's safe and you're playing the GOAT, you've already lost.
I think we should listen to some Scoot Dubs. That makes me feel better. Always. Every time. We've mentioned that he's starting to put out more stuff. There'd been a dry spell, but I think we're on the other end of that spectrum. New track out called Avant Large, and you can pick it up on Bandcamp. It's a buck. You can pick it out. We've got a link in the show notes, but check it out. Scoot Dubs.
Shout out.
Shout out, Scoot Dubs.
Moons will rise and seas will swell. Shadows dance and I can tell tonight that I'm hiking to the river's mouth. There's no feeling now. And receive her proud if it eases down.
Flight movie, this is your life. The world's gone crazy, well it has twice. People in a panic, playing with the night. And pimping turns a profit when it's done right. So say the know-it-alls, living in the land of the lost souls. Yo, we are leper shunning apostles. We're breaking out the frames of our minds. We must be out of our heads, cause it's a sign of the times. Under the rule of the fossils, at the feet of the father. Early morning great risers, laying wait for the monsters. Make the heavenly rosters, battle rules like a scorecard. Having heart sings a loss, cause when the weight of the load is deemed the load of the boss. Flux, yo, we really think we're alone. Phone the mothership to make a return trip to home. 1-800 collect the spaceship, bitch, gone. Adrift in the sea of being everyone, while severing connections with every breath of this poem. Yo, I'm calm like a bomb, giving way to alarm, but near in the center of the storm, the true heart of the ghoul will sling blade you to songs. Yo, that's word to antimatter, recent data suggests, mix up most of the universe, so I guess, you may not matter to me, I doubt I matter to most, I'm here cold, chilling, posted up with my folks, yo, that's me and myself and I, I'm bucking the status quo, I'm not being that guy, yo, I'm rapping out of my psyche, rebel emotional tai chi, going critical like Fukushima Daiichi, but all in preparation for the dawning of new horizons, when a man can conquer evil, if he's eager to drop his pride, but all in due time, build like an architect with the heart of a line. Refine the time, rewind and chain the soul in the line.
Wilder winds will sing a song and how her soul's a haunting melody. And I like it. I don't mind the stormy days, cause in her wake the trail of pain is righteous.
We're back from the break. Like thanks again to Scoot Dubs.
Thank you, Scoot.
This one's produced by DJ Polaris out of Fort Wayne. F Dubs. I know we got some listeners out there. Home of the Mad Ants.
Mad Ants.
That's right. Next up, got my stat of the week.
Joey's stat of the week.
This one actually comes in from listener Charlie sent this in. And I just love this. I just had to take it. Thanks for this. So it's the playoff times, right? This is the time. Mm-hmm. Great players are made. The greatest of all players, Boban Marjanovic. You guys laugh, but I'm there's an article here I read that he has the highest career PER offensive rating, win shares per 48 minutes, and true shooting percentage than every player in NBA history.
What?
Wait, in the playoffs he does?
No. In regular season. The history of the NBA, regular season.
What?
Yeah. Goat. Boban Marjanovic.
His career PER is 28.1, higher than Jordan's 27.9.
What?
Win shares per 48, by far the highest. It's .307. Jordan's was .250, was number two.
All right. I no longer believe any analytics.
The system is broken.
Now I see why all these old crotchety people are like, analytics, screw analytics.
Well, you know, true shooting percentage of all time?
It's .64, so 64.3%. Number two, Cedric Maxwell at 62.9.
He's like blowing him out of the water.
His offensive rebound percentage, 16.8%. It's
what?
He's just behind Dennis Rodman.
Can we get this guy in the offseason? Where is he at right now?
Well, to me, this seems like a failure of the coaches. Like, he clearly produces when he's out there. You know, he's been in the league several years, so it's not, you know, he sees the floor, but he's getting stuff done when he's out there. And you know, if they're going to fall, if his numbers are going to fall, they should fall because he gets more playing time.
Maybe he's telling the coaches, I only want to play 5 minutes a game so I can keep up my stats.
Give me only garbage time, please.
Shout out Boban Bogdanovic. It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
That's also not his name.
Wait, we're talking about not Bogdanovic, not the guy in Washington, the guy in Detroit that has the huge hands.
Yes, right? Boban. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, that's Boban. What Coulson said the wrong
Marjanovic,
name.
Not Bode Bogdanovic.
Right, it's a different person from a
different
family.
What? There are two guys with the same name?
They don't have the same name.
That's the same name. Boban Marjanovic versus Bogdanovic? What is going on? Are they brothers? They're
different letters.
It's Boban Marjanovic and Bojan Bogdanovic.
That is not possible. That's the same person. You can't have...
He's shut up a shell corporation of himself to store all his bad stats.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
He's only keeping the good ones.
He's writing off his bad stats.
Do you think when he misses a shot, he tells the he goes to the scorekeeper's like, oh, that was Bojan.
That was
Bojan. That's exactly what happens.
Anyway, get this guy on the floor some more, coach. We're going next.
Why do they have the same name? I don't know.
They don't have the same name.
What country are they from? It's got to be the same country, right?
Boban's from Serbia.
Bojan is from...
I don't know.
Serbio.
Serbio?
Yeah.
And we have now lost Croatia. All of our Eastern Black listeners.
Croatia. All right.
Okay, yeah. Also, look it up, not the same place. Next up, we have the undergooglables.
Oh, are we doing undergooglables?
That was the plan.
Super excited.
You told us we had to, so.
you said we signed up for it.
In the end, it's going to be better and more true than Google can give you.
Coulson, what do you got for us this week?
So this was a suggestion from a listener. And I thought we're not going to use this because it's too obvious. But then I started thinking about it, and it's actually maybe a little tricky. The origin of the phrase, in one fell swoop.
Falconry.
I like the term of falconry. I liked it. But my issue is fell. Why is the word fell in there? Like you're felling a tree? Like that doesn't seem... It's not like in one big swoop. Is there...
So the thing that comes to my mind is an execution. With the head hit the floor.
Yeah, I think fell actually had a negative connotation back in the day.
So one like really? Terrible fell would be like awful, scary.
Oh, I see. Interesting. Okay. So it was the audience that a beheading would be using this phrase. Does that mean that sometimes it took two fell swoops? Or two,
yeah, for sure.
Two
that's
swoops?
Why they, that's why they came up with the guillotine. It was supposed to be humane.
Right. Oh, right. That's right.
Why he made up the guillotine.
Because you're just
Dr.
hacking away
guillotine.
At that head. Dr. Guillotine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. So the plan is you just got to knock it out with one. So essentially like you're felling a tree. But you're with your axe, but you're knocking off a head in one fell swoop.
Boy, you didn't know this was going to be so dark when you started this. Yeah,
I didn't. I assumed it would be. I assumed it would be falconry, which is kind of why I brought it up. Two, I assume that it's Shakespeare. Although last time I thought it was Shakespeare in a nutshell was actually Pliny the Elder. So what do I know?
Was it the Elder or the Younger?
Maybe it was the Younger. It was.
It was one of the Plinys. It was the Younger.
Yeah. Okay, whichever one was dealing with hanging out with Homer, was that the Younger? I think it was the Younger.
So guillotine invented the guillotine to be more humane. Is this where Kevorkian went wrong? Instead of calling it physician assisted suicide, if he had marketed it as the Kevorkian machine,
oh yeah,
maybe he could have.
Kevorkian machine. Yeah, I kind of feel like he just did stuff on his own. He didn't have like a marketing department, you know. Mm-hmm, he didn't do research, like market research.
Right. Dr. K's super serum.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Dang, this is so dark.
Well, depending on what the record in the series is come Thursday, this might fit just right in.
It might be appropriate. Yeah.
So what are we going with? We're going with guillotine. I'm going with it's got to be Pliny the Younger talking about guillotines
in a extremely prescient moment.
Very different eras.
When did beheading as a capital punishment come about? Like, is that a Middle Ages thing, or were people back in ancient times getting beheaded? They were definitely getting like hands chopped off and stuff like that, right? Like back in the day for like thievery and whatnot.
I feel like once you came up with the axe, you were pretty much just beheading was an option, or the sword.
So you go,
but like the Romans
age.
Would
yeah,
crucify
bronze
people.
Age.
They
yeah,
wouldn't. They wouldn't behead them, right?
Yeah,
maybe
does
because
that come
crucifixion
up
is more cruel and unusual.
Does that come up in the Bible? Does beheading come up in the Bible?
I don't think so. I don't remember a lot of beheadings in the Bible. It's been a while since I've read the whole thing. But
it's interesting. There's definitely somebody out there that did their PhD thesis on the origins of beheading. We should get that person on the pod.
We should.
I'm going to go to the library.
That dude
this
does
week.
Not have a lot of work. We need to throw him a bone.
Exactly.
Is there beheading in the Quran, maybe? I have not read the Quran.
Mm. Mm. Neither am I.
This reminds me. I got a quick story. I was in college.
This
and
can't not be going to a good place.
I was in a English lit class, and we were reading a Flannery O'Connor short story called "The Lame Shall Enter First." And I had to do the report on it, and so I stood up in class and I said, "You know, clearly this is referring to the biblical passage, 'The lame shall enter first.'" And one of the guys, you know, kind of was like, "Yeah, you know, I appreciate your report, but like, I'm a religious major, and I'm pretty sure that's not in the Bible." And I was like, oh, you know, both my parents are ministers. I grew up reading the Bible. Like, pretty sure that is an actual passage from the Bible, just to let you know. And so I then went home and emailed my father. And I was like, I need your backup here. The lame shall enter first is definitely a line there. And his email response to me was, "The last shall enter first. The meek shall inherit the earth, but the lame are on their own."
Wow.
Yeah. So
nice work.
So update on beheadings. It does go back to ancient times. And the Roman Empire used beheading for its own citizens, but crucified forms.
Fair enough.
Okay, has anybody Googled Fell Swoop yet?
No, but I think it's falconry. I'm not gonna say it's beheadings. I think it's falconry.
You just want to be an optimist.
Yeah, it's got to be, right? That's what our show's about. That's what Undo Googleables are about, is falconry.
it's about falconry. Okay. So I'm finding Straight Dope wrote an article about this. It sounds like fell in Old English means awful, terrible, or horrible. It's also
nice,
the same
Harper.
Root word.
Nailed it.
Root word as felon. And swoop is just a quick motion, so it's a terrible motion. And it was in Shakespeare, in Macbeth.
Yes, it sure was.
Always Shakespeare.
So uh-huh. it's one fell swoop just kind of means all at once. It's like a terrible thing that happens all at once.
Graham Donald in the Dictionary of Modern Phrase says it, quote, properly applies to the sudden savage attack of a bird of prey when
Whoa.
It moves into its stoop.
Falcon.
Falconry. But apparently not even Shakespeare used it that way. But as we all know, it all comes back to falconry.
So Macduff says, on hearing that his family and servants have all been killed, did you say all, oh hell kite, all, what all my pretty chickens and their dam at one fell swoop?
I have no idea what that means.
Yeah. Basically, they all got murdered real fast. And kite refers to probably a red kite, which is a hunting bird.
Yeah, that's another under Googleables.
There you go.
Like, nice we know job. What we're doing.
Nice job. Not about guillotines, but, you know.
I feel better about humanity. It wasn't about beheading.
I wanted to ask you guys, everybody's one or two favorite Pacer playoff moments. Those are things you can't get on the internet.
I could ask the internet.
Siri, what's my favorite play?
I think one of my favorites, Colson, was when we were in New Orleans in that double overtime game against the Nets.
Yep.
And in the was it the first overtime where Reggie just like throws down the Thunder Hammer on him?
That was the end of the first overtime, yeah. The first overtime he hits the 40-footer. And
yep.
We lost our mind, and everybody in the bar started watching and rooting for the Pacers because we were so excited.
What was that bar called? Was that
Cooter Browns.
Cooter Browns. That's yeah. it.
Yeah. That was a great night for sure.
Oh, man. That place was nuts. There were no Pacer fans in the house, but by overtime, we had that entire bar rooting Pacers.
Yeah, when Reggie awesome. Dunked to tie it for double overtime, that place erupted.
That's awesome.
That's up there for sure.
Favorite Pacers playoff memory is hazy because I was a young lad, but I went to my dad took me to a playoff game where we were playing the Boston Celtics. This must have been like 90, 91 or something like that.
Larry Bird.
And Larry Bird was playing. It was the Celtics were clearly the higher seed. It was like one of the first time the Pacers had made the playoffs. In the old Market Square Arena, it was a really close and intense game. I can't tell you who won that game, but I just remember it being the first time that I was in an environment where everybody around me was losing their mind, and it was like so loud, and I was like, "This is the coolest thing ever! Like, this is great."
Is that where Chuck Person and Larry Bird go back and forth, and like they both score a bunch of points?
I have no idea. I'll have to ask my dad if he knows what actual game it was, but yeah, I want to say it was like game 4 and we won and sent it back to Boston for game 5. So
nice.
I'll have to look at the, do some digging on Basketball Reference and see if I can deduce what series that actually was.
Sure. Yeah, that's nice. That's fantastic. Joe, do you got a favorite Pacer playoff memory?
I got a couple. One, well, the one of them is the Paul George's Thunder Hammer dunk against against the Heat. You know, those series were always fun, but like just having, you know, at the time, you know, just a young Paul George, you know, just bring it against a team who was just phenomenal. You know, we knew we were always going uphill against those guys. You know, that
I was thinking about that the other day too. The LeBron comes in response with the three pointer after that, but then they had that cool moment where they gave each other a five as they were heading to the benches. That was really cool.
And the other one was so it's the 2013 NBA playoffs, I believe. I think this is right. I think it's 2013. The Pacers are playing the Knicks, and I have obligations as a friend. There's a bachelor party going on that night. Which, of course, I cannot say no to a good friend's bachelor party. But it's like the second round of the playoffs, and Pacers are playing. So you got to go, and you got to watch at least. So what I ended up doing was timing. We were going up and down Mass Ave to different bars. So I was timing I'd find out where we're going next, and then basically they would call a timeout or something, and I would just get up and go so I could miss the minimum amount of basketball. I'd say, okay, I'll meet you at the next bar. What I found out was I didn't tell anybody anything. And I just bolted. I paid my tab and just left. And then I would, you know, I'm sitting at the bar with a guy at McNiven's or something, another Pacer fan, and we're watching the game. And I look down at my phone. I've got like 10 missed phone calls and text messages. Like, where are you? Is everything okay? Because they were still behind me, and I just didn't tell anybody.
That's amazing. So.
That was the block, right? That game?
Where with Carmelo.
Hibbert blocks Carmelo Anthony?
That series, yeah.
It's definitely that series.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was one for me. It was, you know, not too long ago. That was fun. Just you know. Also, it's good to know that people notice when I go missing.
It's always comforting.
It's good information.
I will say I've told this story before, but it's the moment I fell in love with Pacer basketball, which is I was at a party when I was in junior high. And I didn't really follow the Pacers that much, but this game was on and everybody was watching. And so I, you know, thought I'd watch the game. And that was the game where Reggie scored 25 points in the fourth quarter in the Garden against the New York Knicks. And that was the beginning of me being so obsessed with this that I do a podcast about it as a middle-aged man. That will always be burned in my memory. But there's a million of them. There's a ton of them, you know. Reggie hitting the big shot against Jordan on his sprained ankle where he spins around and stuff. That's a great one.
I think we had taped the 8 points in 9 seconds game on our VHS. And I think I just remember watching it just over and over because I just didn't understand how that worked.
How did that happen?
You know, same thing.
You're
sort of
John Starks. You're like, did this dude just did this?
That's pretty much how I felt, but in a good way.
Let me. I want to finish with a joke. It's going to make you feel better.
Hold on. Let me preview the game.
Okay. Good. Oh, we have another game.
So the
only in theory.
Pacers continue this madness Sunday, April 23rd, 1 p.m.
W!
That's on ABC, fans. Get your tickets. And then Tuesday, April 25th, travel to Cleveland.
I have no comment.
Wait. Thursday, April 27th, back in Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And then next Saturday, April 29th, Game 7 at Cleveland.
Do or die, Game 7.
Clear your schedules. Those things are definitely happening.
All right, so what's the difference between a hippo and a Zippo?
Fire.
One's really heavy and the other's a little lighter.
Okay.
I've heard that joke.
That's
pretty
not
strong.
Bad.
It's pretty strong.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Oh, man. It was an epic loss. We were there.
This is epic.
Quit piling on.
Yeah. Man.
We got game four. I am going to be happy with our game four victory. I am going to rejoice.
Me too, man. It's going to be awesome.
You going to sing the jingle in like live and in person? What is that? How do you sing the jingle? Rejoice. Pacer fans, rejoice.
Yeah.
Kevin Serafin.
Well, I'd like to take a moment and thank you, the listener, for spending some time with us. Really glad that you're here. I think it's awesome. This is what we love, and glad to have you here doing this with us. Until Sunday at 1 p.m., Pacers taking on the Cavs for Game 4, which is not the last game of the series, because they're going to win, despite what Colson says. But you can find us on Twitter. Send us tweets. We are at Undebeatables. We're on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. Our website is TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form that you can send us all a message. You can review us on iTunes. It really helps new listeners find our show. Our email address, shoutout@TheUndebeatables.com. We got some t-shirts for sale, too. You can find them on our website.
Yeah, and to everybody, go out and go to the game on Sunday. Cheer hard. You know, let's support this team to the bitter end, despite what I said earlier. But when I sing this for Bobby Sick-Leonard, I mean it. Turn out the lights. The party's over.
I really want to go back and listen to Mark and Slick on the radio broadcast. And hear the
Poor Slick.
There must have been cursing. There must have been cursing.
I bet the 5 second delay was never more important than it was tonight.
The people are tuning in. They're like, "What happened to my radio signal? It's been silent for 10 seconds."
Is this a monthly scheduled test of the emergency broadcast system?
Technical difficulties.
Oh man!
And it comes back and Boyle's just saying, "Slick, you can't do that.
You know better."
He's already in the Indiana Sportscaster Hall of Fame. It doesn't matter. You can't take anything from him.
It's just the right thing to do and the right way to go about it.
Right.
So we have an organization where our GM doesn't understand how basketball works. Our coach doesn't understand how coaching works. Our super duper star leader doesn't understand how to lead a team, and our most vocal leader and champion of the team has been on the team for 8 games.
That is correct, sir. Your 2017-2018 Indiana Pacers.
That's how you draw it up.
16-17.
No, I'm just looking into the future, buddy.
Forward. Don't do that, please.
The state of this franchise.
Keep your
eyes
down.
Ain't nothing changing, buddy. Just come back for more next year. It's going to be great.
Keep your eyes down and towards your feet, please.
Keep your hands inside the ride.
Yes.